This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Prepare yourselves this morning, ladies and gentlemen, for a shopping spree. As of the 15th of June, you'll be able to buy a pair of trousers. You might even be able to buy a shirt. You'll be able to buy some furniture. And if you want to, you can even buy a car, if you so wish. The lockdown is easing, even as we speak, and as Spain and Greece prepare to welcome holidaymakers this summer, it's starting to look like there might finally be a pathway out of this particular horror show. Yesterday saw one of the more remarkable days in the world of politics and in the world of the coronavirus lockdown scenario. The massed ranks of Her Majesty's press piled on a very calm and measured Dominic Cummings, despite the death rates reducing, despite the infection rate decreasing, despite government announcements on the lifting of the lockdown. These bozos from Her Majesty's press are still insisting that the government's chief advisor is the story. And even after he explained in perfectly understandable terms what he had done, when he had done it, and where it had all happened, they still wanted more. More details, more apologies, more regrets, more recriminations. At one point, the fiasco became so farcical that Dominic Cummings was being asked about petrol stations, the woods, and going to the toilet. The depth to which journalism in this country has sunk is really quite something to behold. Meanwhile, there is still no apology from The Mirror or The Guardian for getting it completely wrong, particularly with regard to the phantom witness who claims to have seen him in Durham when he says he was actually not there at all. I've got one question for you all this morning. Do you wish to be governed by the party and the people that you elected to run this country by a massive margin? Or do you want to be told what to do by the Three Stooges? And by that I mean Robert Peston, Laura Kunzberg and Beth Rigby. 0344 499 1000. This story should be done and dusted today. We'll speak to Tim Montgomery this morning to finally put it to bed, and then we can all get on with the real news, can't we? 0344 499 1000 is the number. We'll be talking to travel guru Simon Calder about the possibility of a holiday abroad, possibly in Greece or Spain in July, and he'll bring us the latest from the airline business about when you'll be able to get on a plane again. Plus, we'll be hearing from our friends all over the place in all sorts of different parts of the world, from Spain to Greece to Norway, to Japan, to South Korea. We'll be bringing you up to date on everything that's happening around the world. And as for our homeschooling section today, I'm going to be learning how to do origami. I mean, somebody's got a sense of humour around here, because the idea of me folding up little tiny pieces of paper with these hands, I mean, really? You really think that's going to go well? I don't. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Let us begin today with a conversation with Tim Montgomery, founder of Conservative Home, conservative commentator, of course, a man who over the past several days has been calling for the resignation of Dominic Cummings. Tim, I assume you've changed your mind now. Very good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Mike. Well, look, I would be a very happy citizen of your republic, Mike. I think generally I would be a very happy citizen. But I'm afraid we do disagree on this one. And you always hate disagreeing with people on the sort of same side of the big
issues.
Not
at all.
But I don't think the press are the problem here. You say, you know, oh, we shouldn't be obeying the orders and the dictates of the Three Stooges. I don't think that's the issue at all. I think on this occasion, the media have been asking the questions that the public have wanted asked and wanted Dominic Cummings to answer. This has all been so repeated over the last few days. So, you know, it's difficult to say anything new. But the fact is, Dominic Cummings set the rules that so many of us have abided by over recent weeks. Now, I think some of those rules were silly, but they were the rules. People lived by them. They didn't see bereaved, you know, dying relatives. They've kept their children at school, often at, you know, massive inconvenience. And yet you have the Prime Minister's advisor flouting those rules without apology or without any real sense of humility. So, no, I do think it's a big issue. And I was glad that the press did their job yesterday. They were certainly representing me, Mike.
Well, you may say that, Tim, but first of all, I would take issue with two things that you've said. You say he flouted the rules. He didn't flout the rules. He explained in quite very simple to understand terms that when you have a child for whom you are concerned, who is clearly vulnerable at the age of four, you are allowed a little bit of leeway. As he says, we are not living in a world where every single institution and every single thing that you do is governed by the rules of lockdown. There is room for interpretation. And in his case, that's what he did. And I refuse to accept that he broke the rules. And I also refuse to accept that the press, who have become fixated with Dominic Cummings, as you well know, for the best part of the last 4 to 5 months. I mean, the Sunday Times has been relentlessly, you know, publishing stories about him without any attribution. Much of what was written about his trips to Durham, certainly the second trip, is wrong. They still haven't retracted that from the Mirror and the Guardian. In fact, as late as 11 o'clock last night, Pippa Crerar still had that tweet pinned to the top of her Twitter feed. You know, there have been mistakes made and there have been allegations made which have not been retracted. And I think he has a very good point when he says part of the reason people are angry is because they've read stories about him which aren't true.
Do you ever remember a government minister appearing at those famous Downing Street lecterns now that have become so famous, Mike, and saying, if you do need to drive 200 miles across the country to be with someone for a special reason, you know, please do it? Because I don't remember them saying anything like that. I remember them saying,
yeah, they also
the
didn't say if you wish to,
and
if,
again and
but hang
again.
On, but they also didn't say if you wish to put sugar in your tea, please go ahead and do so. You know, we are not living.
That's silly.
It's not silly.
The overall message was absolutely clear. Stay at home. We were told it again and again and again. So let me ask you this another question. Sorry, I don't know whether I'm turning the tables too much.
No, please do. You're more than welcome.
But Mary Wakefield, Dominic Cummings' wife, wrote a piece in The Spectator a couple of weeks ago, in which, very movingly, she described some of the agonies that family had been through while they both suffered from COVID. Not one mention of going up to Durham. Not one mention of going up, you know, 200-odd miles.
And he explained that.
And that's because they were embarrassed.
No, not
they
at all.
Knew
no,
they
he
were.
Explained. No, come on, Tim. You watched the press conference yesterday. He explained that. He was asked about that. Why was Durham never mentioned? He said quite clearly, and you would understand if you've seen the scenes outside of his house, which are quite frankly disgraceful, run by
disgraceful.
This ghastly organisation called Led by Donkeys, people shouting in the street. I mean, imagine
with
a four-year-old child walking out of that house every morning to be greeted by that, right? He said quite correctly, I did not wish to give away the fact that I was in another location, because already even his parents have been now doorstepped by Sky. They've had people turning up shouting at them. You know, we live in a very toxic and nasty culture these days.
Well, look, that was, you know, the scenes that we've seen outside the house of Dominic and Mary Wakefield, you know, are horrible. I readily concede, and I'm certainly not going to defend every action of the press, but what I don't get with you is you're seeing this in very black and white terms. And I think
absolutely not.
Dominic Cummings' case, there's an awful lot of black there as well as white, a lot of misdeed as well as understandable actions. And the fact was, back to that Spectator article, I do think it matters. He was safely returned to London when that article was written, and yet Durham wasn't mentioned. He was hiding the reality.
Well, not
of
really,
what he
because
did.
If you would, if
he
you
knew that he was wrong.
No, that's afraid. Not true. I think far too much sort of detail is being attempted to be eked out by those people in the media who I can tell you very, very correctly are completely secretive. I mean, does Beth Rigby have a second home? Does Robert Peston have a second home? I bet they all do. I bet they've been to them. I bet they've gone to them. We will never find out because they'll never tell us. But I wouldn't accuse them of being secretive. People have things that they keep to themselves. I, for example, have been working every single day of the week in the office at News UK. Now, you might say to me, I have broken the lockdown rules because I should have been working from home. But actually, I'm allowed to work from here because it says quite clearly that I'm a key worker, as I'm sure Dominic Cummings is a key worker because he's in the government, and I'm therefore allowed to travel every day to work, which is what I do, in my car, with my producer, and then I go home again. Now, if you wanted to pin me out and get Robert Peston on my case and ask me some long-winded 35-minute question, I'm sure that he might somehow get something out of that and accuse me of breaking the rules. But I haven't broken the rules because the rules are bendable.
Well, they are bendable to some extent, and I think everyone will try and interpret the rules in the kindest possible way. But to travel all the way across the country, and you know, you, Mike, even you must concede that the idea that you go on a 60-mile round trip to test your eyesight was really stretching the bounds of.
I agree that that's a bit weird. However, I mean, I personally did not see my own children for 7 to 8 weeks because I didn't think it was a good idea to drive, funnily enough, about an 80-mile round trip into Sussex and back to see them. I made that sacrifice. I'm willing to do that. I'm not expecting everybody to do that. And I think, understandably, what Dominic Cummings did is not wrong. I don't feel any anger towards him. I don't know these people who do feel anger towards him. I don't know, you know, yesterday, for example, Sky News were up in Castle, whatever it's called, saying, oh, yes, we haven't found anybody here who supports Dominic Cummings, but everybody's very angry. They didn't have anyone to interview. They had nobody on camera saying that they were angry.
Well, that may be the case, but the opinion polls that YouGov have put out, and I'm sure you agree, YouGov is a very reputable pollster.
Up to a point, you know, old copper.
Had over two-thirds of their people thinking that the Prime Minister's senior advisor had broken the rules. And whether, you know, we're going to continue to disagree on whether he broke the rules or not. But when you have a massive perception out there amongst the public that the Prime Minister didn't obey the rules that most people have been trying to live by, that's a big problem, because one of the most important qualities a government has during a pandemic is its authority, the trust in the words that it says, that the Prime Minister, that ministers say at those lecterns. And so, at the very least, this has been a media management disaster. You know, if Dominic Cummings had said what he said yesterday, you know, 2 days earlier, you know, we might have got through this messy, grubby affair a lot more quickly. Mm.
But this is another problem, Tim, isn't it?
Competence does matter in a government as well. They have mishandled this, as well as the fundamental issue of, you know, what went on in Dominic Cummings' trip to Durham, etc.
But I disagree entirely with everything you said, because what you're basically endorsing, Tim, which surprises me about a man of your intellect, is that you're saying it's all very well for the Three Stooges to cook up an entire media storm around false accusations, around misinformation, around a kind of technique and a bullying style of journalism to basically catch a guy out and say that because you're now the story, you have to go. I think that's nonsense. Dominic Cummings is a key part of this government. I believe he has many, many more contributions to make. And to lose him over something as trivial as this, I think, is a nonsense.
Well, if you want to look at bullying, I'm afraid Dominic Cummings' behaviour towards the media has hardly been
warm over the years.
And I'm afraid the media are probably getting a little bit of revenge.
Yes, but there's more at stake here, Tim, surely.
That's unattractive. Look, if you want to discuss with me the qualities of the British media and some of the ways that the British media behave, I'll largely be on your side, Mike. But I'm not on the side of how Dominic Cummings has behaved. And I don't think most of your listeners who stayed at home and done the right thing over the last couple of months, against their better judgment, I think the lockdown has been far too onerous. I'm glad it's being lifted, but I've stayed at home as well. I've you know, not suffered in any extreme way, but I've been absent from loved ones. And I think the fact that Dominic Cummings felt that he couldn't get childcare in London, which seems to me ridiculous. And
it's not ridiculous in a lockdown. It's not.
Indefensible.
Because, I mean, one of the things that people have been saying, I know you have to run, so I'm going to keep this short. One of the things that people have been saying is, why didn't he stay where he was? Why didn't he seek help from the local council? Well, excuse me, one, I would not, as a parent, entrust any of my children to any local council in this country because of the way that they've behaved. I certainly would not entrust them to a council who are already under an awful lot of strain and pressure because of the fact that they can't cope with all the people they're already looking after. So, under those circumstances, you know, he decided to go to the safest place he knew, which was the bosom of his family's farm, where he knew there was a separate dwelling where he could isolate himself. And that's what he did. Under the law, he didn't break it. They said, first of all, he broke the law, which they didn't. Then they said he broke the rules. Then they said, oh, he didn't. He broke the spirit of the rules. I mean, come on.
Well, there certainly have been examples of things said by the media that are false. And of course, the media haven't apologised and they never apologise. That is wrong. But I just wish Dominic Cummings hadn't descended to the same standards of the media.
OK. Tim, thank you very much indeed. Tim Montgomery, founder of Conservative Home, Conservative commentator, of course. A man who has a lot of interesting things to say. I disagree with him entirely on this.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. We've got lots more coming up. Simon Calder is going to join us in the last hour of the show to talk us through what is going on in Spain and Greece. Spain saying that they're going to drop their quarantine rules in July. Greece is already saying they want people to come and start having holidays there. Let's find out whether we can go on holiday anytime soon, because we're all going to need one fairly soon after all this is over. I have to tell you that. Let's talk to Stuart Jackson now, though, who is a former MP, of course, former special advisor to David Davis as well. Stuart, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Now, I'm hoping against hope that you've somehow managed to get over the ghastly tragedy of the resignation of Douglas Ross, a man of whom I had heard nothing before this moment and who I may expect to hear nothing from again, ever.
I'm coping. It's traumatic, Mike, but I'm getting through it.
Yeah, apparently he's a referee. You maybe can go back and do a bit of that up in Scotland.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I've got to say about Douglas Ross, when he got a lot of stick for, you know, missing his parliamentary duties to be refereeing football matches. Mm. You know, a lot of his colleagues rallied round and stuck up for him. And good luck to him. You know, he was re-elected in Murray again. I just think this is pointless, frankly. Yeah. You know, we need to move on. Does Douglas Ross want to be in the same camp as Alistair Campbell?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I see Alistair Campbell lecturing the government about integrity and ethics...
Yeah.
As I said on Twitter,
it's sickening, isn't it?
It's like being lectured on the Hippocratic Oath by Harold Shipman.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, his name is synonymous with mendacity and devious dishonesty in government, and he's lecturing Boris Johnson. I mean, it's ludicrous. I just think we've got to move on because, frankly, you know, there's a lot of good news coming. We're reopening schools, we're reopening shops, we're doing 3 million tests. We're getting track and tracing going. We're rebooting the economy. We've saved the NHS. We've got ICU beds that are nowhere near capacity. We've got enough PPE and ventilators now. Let's look on the positive side. No one cares, frankly, about Dominic Cummings out there.
I thought Boris Johnson was brilliant last night because, you know, the idea that the three stooges, as I call them, of Beth Rigby, Laura Kunzberg and Robert Peston spend an entire hour and plus asking Dominic Cummings practically what colour underwear he's wearing and which petrol station he might have stopped at and how many miles per gallon his car does, right? They then asked Boris Johnson the same questions, and I thought, all credit to him for saying, look, you've had all that, that's all gone. Let's talk about what actually is happening now in government. I mean, as Dominic said yesterday, you know, the Prime Minister's time is very precious. And he should not have to waste it in front of these bozos who can't ask him a question that's worth a fag end.
Well, it's not just that, Mike. It's a coordinated response, isn't it? You only have to look at these weirdy, beardy bishops. I know you had a go at them the other day. You know, I'm an Anglican. I go to church. I love the Church of England, but I'm embarrassed by this nonsense, this coordinated approach, you know, this synthetic rage. Let's call it out for what it is. Whatever Cummings has done, and, you know, it's questionable you could make the case that he broke the rules.
I don't think he did.
He didn't break the law.
No.
He didn't breach social distancing rules. This is what it is, this mass hysteria. It's Brexit payback.
Yeah.
It's about taking out a key person, weakening Boris, weakening the government, extending Brexit transition and undermining Brexit. That's what it is. That's why you've got all these people who are on the same side, like Lady Nugent in Islington South, cheering on the idiots and thugs who are displaying antisocial behaviour against Cummings and his family. Yeah. It's shocking.
It really is. I mean, when you see what's going on outside his house, it is actually quite criminal what is going on. And if I were him, I mean, you know, all credit to him for not just giving up and chucking it all in and saying, you know what, this is not worth it for me and my family and my four-year-old child, you know, getting harassed and jostled, carrying a child into a house from the car. It's quite disgraceful.
Well, it's not just that, is it? That is right, that it's like a banana republic, you know, that people like him who are in the public space actually could earn more in the private sector, like a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, they are being abused, physically threatened, their family feel... I mean, I've been through this in the expenses scandal. I've been through everything. I've been through the expenses scandal. I've been through other stuff. It's frightening and nasty, particularly, and I had it a little bit in the expenses scandal, as did a lot of MPs, when your neighbours turn on you and they tittle-tattle to the media. That's pretty nasty. It's like those creepy people that dobbed in Boris when he had an argument with Carrie Simmons in his place. It's not nice. And frankly, you know, for Sky TV to be doorstepping his elderly parents in County Durham, it's just lower than low. You know, have some self-respect and decency, guys.
Yeah.
There's a job to do in the media, but you don't want to be scraping the barrel.
No, there's plenty of questions that could be asked. I mean, I'm often asked by people on this show and also on social media, well, what would you ask them then? You know, I could give you a list of about 10 questions that I would ask Boris Johnson right now if I was put in front of him, none of which would be about Dominic Cummings, none of which would be about whether he has any rows with Carrie Simmons, all of which would be information-based and useful to people so that when you get to ask politicians questions, you're able to give information to people which is useful to them.
Yeah, people want to know, how's track and tracing going to work?
Yeah.
How's it going on the Isle of Wight? How many are we going to have tested by the end of June? Are we going to be able to go, do we have to do a staycation on our holiday in July or August, or can we go abroad? Can we start commuting to our jobs in cities and big towns? You know, can we see our elderly relatives? As I say, I've got an elderly father in his mid-80s. I want to know, does he really need to stay in another 6 weeks and go out and not go out at all? These are the issues, not whether Dominic Cummings sat by the river in Castle Barnard or Barnard Castle in County Durham.
Right.
No one's interested in that. There's 66 million people who want to get their life back. And this is just a bubble story that we just need to move on from.
Yes, and I'm hopeful that in the coming days that will happen, because as I assume as normal, there will be a press briefing this afternoon. I think the government should refuse to take any more questions about Dominic Cummings, as Boris did last night, and just get on with the business of governing the country and get on with the business of opening up the shops and opening up the schools and telling us what's going to happen after that, and making sure that people are confident in the economy returning, surely.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing you've touched on it is people like Beth Rigby, and I know Beth Rigby, and I know Laura Koonsberg, and in many ways they are very professional at the top of their game, but they need to think hard about why they're at 31% in public approval below everyone else, including politicians. It's because of this incessant gotcha politics, you know. You've made a gaffe, you've made a U-turn, you know, why are people taking any notice of you? Because you're inherently wicked and terrible. People are not stupid. They can see through that agenda. They do want answers. They want proper questions asked. And actually, you know, I would say this, but I think the government has done not a stellar job, but this is unprecedented what they've had to do. They have helped with a lot of good people out there to save the NHS by their decisions. They've made some mistakes, I accept, but it could have been a lot worse than where we are now.
And what about all these weasels in the Tory party who have offered to get Cummings out? These are the same people who have refused for 2 days in a row to come on this show and defend themselves and to say why they believe that Cummings should go. What about them?
Well, there's a few people who are disappointed that they haven't been given ministerial office. A few people. I mean, the Tory party in Parliament is like the rest of the world, mad, bad and sad. Mm. You know, a lot of good people, a lot of fantastic local MPs. But if you look at a lot of those people, they're disappointed. The Boris haters, you know, one particular guy that's been all over the media this week. Mm. He's been in Parliament over 30 years. I won't name him.
Yeah, I know.
But he's a Boris hater. He actually heckled Boris when Boris gave his valedictory speech when he stepped down as Foreign Secretary in Parliament.
Yeah.
You know, these people don't like Boris. They can't see through the red mist. And, you know, it's very unfortunate. But, you know, parties are families. Families fall out. Parties in Parliament fall out. But it will pass. I've seen this squall before in the media. Things will pass and people will start to focus on a better future. Schools reopening, rebooting the economy, businesses working again and getting back to normal.
Sure. Stuart, appreciate your time. Thanks very much indeed. Stuart Jackson, former Tory MP, of course, former special advisor as well to David Davis, talking an awful lot of sense. This story needs to be basically put a stop to. There's no more story. Dominic Cummings is no longer the focus of anybody's attention outside of the Westminster bubble. And pretty soon, I'm going to stop talking about it as well. This is Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the greatest show on the radio and the fastest growing radio station on the planet. Let's talk to Simon Calder, our good friend from The Independent, the man who knows all there is to know about quarantine rules, about travel around the world and much else besides. Simon, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mike. Great to talk to you and I hope you are well and happy. And yes, great celebrations. Viva España.
Yes.
We will all be able to go there from the 1st of July onwards, which we kind of knew already because they made lots and lots of indications. Of course, the big elephant in the quarantine room is that you and I, when we go off to sunny Spain, we'll have to come back and then spend 2 weeks in the same room, self-isolating from everybody else.
Yes.
And that will take the dampers off even a holiday with you, Mike, I must
say. Well, I must say, I mean, even I would not particularly enjoy locking myself up for 2 weeks, even on my own, to be honest, you know, because one of the things that I've had luckily been able to do during this lockdown is that I've been able to come to work every day in the News UK studios because I am an essential worker, they call me, because I'm doing the live stream on TV from here. And so if I'd had to work from home, I think I probably would have gone completely stark, staring, bonkers mad. It doesn't take much, you know, but we've just been talking to a colleague over in Greece as well, because they look as if they're inviting people to come, but at the moment they're talking about having a different sort of set of rules for people coming from places where there's not much coronavirus, like Scandinavia, from Norway, for example, and Denmark, and then Spain and Italy, probably more rules in place in terms of testing people when they get there.
We are very, very much not on the A list, not on the B list in the case of Cyprus. They are prioritising different countries depending on how well they see that they have coped with the coronavirus pandemic. So if you look, for example, particularly at the Mediterranean islands, Cyprus has drawn up an A list and a B list of who they want. We don't appear on either. Malta has its own A list. It hasn't come up with a B list or further since then, but we're definitely not wanted on that. However, there is some good news, Mike, because we can go to Croatia on Friday evening.
Really?
Just before the bank holiday, I spoke to the director of Croatia Tourism, and she said, yep, anybody, over you come, no problem at all.
That'd be great for me, because I haven't been there since the war.
Which war, Mike?
The war in the Balkans back in the 90s.
Okay.
I flew into to split via Rome on a very nice Alitalia flight. And I then had to get myself into a non-bulletproof larder and drive it up the hill to a place called Vitez, which had only just been attacked by a massive suicide bomb.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, terrible, I mean, you travel times. Guys, you think you have it rough when you have to spend a week in the Yemen. You know, I was a month in Bosnia, the central Bosnian part of the world, where people were getting shot dead just for going to get petrol.
Oh, absolutely awful.
But, so I would like to go back under better circumstances, because the coastline in Croatia is absolutely stunning, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is. And the great thing is that this covers everywhere from kind of the northern border with Slovenia and the wonderful Istrian Peninsula down through the great, great towns. And I must say, Split, when it's not having a war, is brilliant. And you've got all the wonderful islands along the coast as well. And then further south, of course, Dubrovnik, the great star of Croatia. It's an absolutely gorgeous place, and they will have us back. They say all you need is an accommodation reservation, just proof that you are going to be staying in Croatia, and that's great. And
really?
You can come over here now. And
so what about are the hotels all opening up then? And is the villa, what's the villa business like in Croatia?
I imagine it's a bit slow at the moment, but picking up, no doubt. And that's a really good reason, actually, for requiring accommodation, because the last thing you want is a whole bunch of people showing up if there aren't enough beds to go
around. Well, that's
right.
And I mean, also, we've been having conversations about this in the family, talking about, you know, endless sort of destinations, because we do quite like the odd holiday. I'm wondering, I don't want to alarm anybody, but it would be sensible probably for us more to go to a villa where there's likely to be less people than to go to a hotel where there's likely to be more.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I think that there's going to be an awful lot of people who are thinking, self-catering, that's what I like, and villas, and indeed camping and caravanning. Those are very good ways of isolating. So I think
I'm not going to go that mad.
Well,
I mean, you won't get me in a tent, I'm afraid, Simon.
Well, I shall see this as a personal challenge, Mike.
It's one of those big ones they do in Africa when you go on safari.
There will be, people will be much more, I think, attracted to places where they can effectively just transfer their household from here to there. But obviously, there's an awful lot that needs to happen before you can do that. Test one, are you able to get legally to an airport here? No, you're not, or a seaport, or a international railway station. Test two, does the Foreign Office advise against all but essential travel? Yes, it still does. Anywhere, indefinitely abroad.
Right.
Third test, is there going to be a plane to get you there? Well, the nice lady at the Croatian Tourist Board said, all you've got to do is fly out of Heathrow, get to Frankfurt, and then you can connect from there to Croatia.
Okay. So Ryanair and EasyJet don't go to Split or anything?
Oh, they will be, but not until July.
Okay.
Nobody's flying there from the UK at the moment.
Right.
Test four, does the destination want you? And most of them do. Croatia is going to be first. There is a kind of arms race. I'm playing lockdown holiday bingo. So Croatia is the first number to come up. Then you've got Italy is going to be there. Portugal, very, very far ahead, apart from Madeira and the Azores. We're going to see, obviously, Spain, France, I think, despite coming up with this, if you're going to have quarantine, we're going to quarantine you. They're not very serious about it. They think it has zero medical benefits.
Right.
They're just doing it because we are doing
it. Are they not doing that at the moment, or are they?
No, they just say, basically, we think quarantine's a stupid idea.
Right.
But if you're going to do it, then so are we.
Yeah. Reason I ask you that question is a friend of mine, when they opened up ferry bookings again, has booked to go to France because he's got a house there. And he's booked the ferry for something like, I think, maybe the second week of June, which is when the quarantine's meant to kick in. And he's a bit unsure now what to do.
Yeah, okay, well, in terms of the quarantine that the French are applying, from everything I understand, is not anything like as serious as our quarantine. The French are basically just saying, as far, and forgive me, it's all in French and my translation is not as good as it could be, but they seem to be saying, we will insist that you spend 2 weeks in self-isolation if that's all right with you.
Right.
But actually, if you've got, if you don't really fancy it, if you've got a, good reason not to do it, or if you've got to
pop out to the supermarché.
Yeah, then actually, we'll quite understand. But if all other things being equal, why don't you go and self-isolate?
Yes.
And I don't think they expect people to take it seriously, but it's just, diplomatic.
Well, they're not great on rules, are they, the French? I mean, they like sort of saying things, but they don't really like doing anything.
Oh, well, I think that's possibly I would put that in the generalisation thing.
Well,
I
mean, they've actually been, that's what we do here at the Independent Republic. We make generalisations.
I think they would say that they've been pretty pretty sharp on their lockdown, which is why they can unlock now. I'm not speaking.
Sure,
for
no, listen, I'm not speaking. I'm not speaking generally about the lockdown scenario,
but
I mean,
general,
famously, General de Gaulle once said, "How would you expect a nation to be in any way united when they have something like 26,000 different varieties of cheese?"
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is a country which prides itself on not following the herd and basically doing whatever it likes.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, so I wouldn't be too worried about the quarantine going into France, and,
right.
and neither for going to Spain or to any other country, even though they have quarantine rules and some parts. So Madeira says 14 days quarantine. And that's because it's an island,
right.
special case.
What are you expecting price-wise, by the way, from all of these places? Are you expecting them to be low or high?
Initially, just to get people on planes, the airfares are spectacularly low. So Manchester to Amsterdam on the 1st of July, it's less than 50 quid return. You can get from Edinburgh to Lisbon for about 60 quid return.
Wow.
They are just putting in silly prices in order to get people on planes and to get us travelling again. And the idea is that you know, you'll come back, say, well, that was fantastic, and you'll tell me, and I'll think, oh, I can go abroad. Because at the moment, there is a huge amount of anxiety about people travelling abroad, as you will completely understand,
yes.
I imagine.
Well, I think people are slightly concerned about what happens when they're there. You know, for example, are they covered by insurance? You and I have spoken about this before. They may not be able to be covered for everything. What happens if for something, you know, some reason, you know, the lockdown sort of reappears because of,
yes.
of a second peak or something, or while they're away back here in Britain, the lockdown gets hardened again and they can't get back. I think those are the kind of things that people worry about.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, and I could kind of go through all of those anxieties and try to assuage them, in particular the last one.
Yeah.
You know, if you're British and you want to come home, there's no possibility that the UK will not let you in. But
okay.
obviously, along with everybody else, from the 8th of June, you will be expected to self-isolate for 2 weeks.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm hoping that come July, some of that might have been slightly sort of relaxed as well.
Well, far be it from me to say that this is entirely too much too late. And at the moment, the government is desperately trying to find ways of getting around it. That's why there's been all this talk of air bridges.
Right.
Now, it is utterly fatuous to suggest, for example, that Germany will say, oh, yes, Britain, because your record is so fantastic, i.e. six times worse than ours.
Right.
Yeah, so we'll have we won't quarantine your people if you don't quarantine our people.
Right. Reason why I'm so puzzled by these figures that they keep going on about, because at the end of the day, you know, we seem to be measuring figures that nobody else is measuring. And we also seem to be telling people that the numbers are getting higher because of care homes rather than because of the actual infections on the street. Our infection rate is now going down.
Oh, sure. Look, infection rates are going down, thank goodness,
yeah.
right across Europe, which is great. And I'm very worried about the rest of the world, particularly Africa and Latin America.
Mm.
But in the UK, as with everywhere else, the infection rates are going down. Let's hope, let's pray that in a month's time, the infection rate will be really, really much lower. It will still, though, be higher. And I know international comparisons can't be exact. It will still be considerably higher than France, Spain, Portugal, Italy, Greece. However, they, I think, will help the Department for Transport, which realises how damaging quarantine will be to thousands of jobs, to some great travel companies. And they'll sign agreements saying, oh, yeah, here's an air bridge of agreement, even though they've got exactly nothing to gain from it apart from a whole load of British tourists.
No, exactly.
And so I am genuinely saying to people, I will eat my hat or any other item of clothing that you choose to nominate if we are still looking at anything like quarantine to the most popular destinations by August. The travel industry would just break permanently and it would be an utterly awful outcome. So even though the government's in favour of quarantine, the Labour Party is very in favour of quarantine, I think that pretty quickly it will be eased, and by July it won't be happening. But of course, nobody in their right mind is booking trips right now, because they're thinking, well, I don't know, I'm going to have to stay inside for 2 weeks unless I do the so-called Dublin Dodge, which of course we do not recommend or condone.
Although I was told the Dublin Dodge wouldn't really work for most people, because if you are in receipt of some kind of biometric passport, it kind of knows where you've been anyway, doesn't it?
It doesn't matter that you've been there. So no, it's not a... of course, you can say, oh, yeah, well, before that, I was in Ulaanbaatar out of Mongolia, but I've just come from Dublin, and therefore you cannot make me self-isolate.
Yes.
I mean, we do not recommend it, because it increases the amount of contact that you have with people, increases the amount of travel that you have. Right. But to say, as Grant Shapps did on Saturday night, it doesn't exist, is mistaken, I think, is the most polite way I would say.
Okay. All right. Simon, as ever, thank you very much indeed. Simon Calder, travel editor for The Independent there, giving us the lowdown on lockdown and what exactly you can do in Europe at the moment, which is not very much at all. But it could get better, not later than June the 15th. It could get better, perhaps as early as July. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll let you know. Let's go now, though, very quickly to Madrid, where Rebecca Nunes is there. She's been out and about checking out what's going on in that part of the world. Rebecca, very good afternoon to you. Welcome back.
Hello, lovely to speak to you, Mike. I'm going to give you a good news, because you were talking about quarantine.
Mm.
And the government announced this past weekend that they were aiming to reopen for international tourism in July. And yesterday they declared that that 14-day quarantine that was announced 2 weeks ago for international travelers will stop from the 1st of July. So the quarantine was always going to be a temporary measure that was only going to last while the state of alarm was in place. But they said it yesterday, so from the 1st of July, international tourism can come to Spain without having to do that 14-day quarantine. They'll obviously explain more of the details and all of that, but it's a good news if you want to come over.
Yeah, well, if the people who are watching on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter can see a video that you did yesterday of people out and about having drinks, sitting outside in a cafe, it would appear. Do the quarantine rules exist for every part of Spain? Does it include like the Balearic Islands as well and the Canaries or not?
Yeah. So actually, those are the areas that have been doing a lot better. They are some of the islands already in phase two, which is the images you're seeing right now. Madrid entered yesterday into phase one. And as I've told you before, well, in phase one, you're allowed to meet up with people of up to 10 people and the terraces reopen. We could see some terraces still closed. They didn't want to rush reopening without the proper measures in place. But we saw others that were opening and complying with the instructions given by the government. So you have 50% of capacity and 2 meters distance between the tables, then gel and all of that. I spoke to some people that obviously manage restaurants. Everyone was very happy. I mean, they said it was a lot of work, as most terraces were full, but they were happy that they could reopen and get back to work and slowly move towards that new normal.
Okay, and are people warming to the idea? They're coming outside, mixing with other people. I can see from the video that there's quite a few people sitting there and, you know, not necessarily that far apart from one another.
So wearing a face mask is mandatory in Spain, as long if you cannot respect... So, indoors, if you kind of respect the social distancing and outdoors as well. But you don't have to wear a mask if you can't, the activity you're doing, it can't be wearing a mask. So for example, eating and drinking. So you could see people putting it down, eating, drinking, then putting it back up while they were talking. So I think we're all just getting used to it and adjusting. We're all moving towards that new normal. But I think everyone was very happy yesterday in Madrid that we could actually go out and enjoy terraces and the good weather.
Fantastic stuff, Rebecca. Well, great to see you. Hopefully see you soon, either there or here. Either we'll come to you or you'll come to us. We don't know how it's going to work, but we're definitely going to do it sometime before the summer. Rebecca Noon's reporting into us from Madrid, where things are heating up, as you can see from the weather, and where people are getting out and about, where the bars and the restaurants are opening up. And some soon, from July, there will be no more quarantine. So you can go on holiday there. The only problem will be getting back here to see what we're doing in this part of the world.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk of Radio. We are now about to speak with Robert Jenrick, the Housing Secretary from the government. Robert, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Hello, good afternoon.
Thanks very much for joining us. You've got a policy on homelessness that you want to tell us about. 6,000 new supported homes as part of a landmark commitment to end rough sleeping.
Absolutely. At the beginning of the pandemic, we were very concerned about the people sleeping rough on our streets. They're obviously naturally very exposed, but also they tend to have respiratory conditions that made them clinically very vulnerable to COVID. So we set out to get as many of them as possible off the streets and into safer accommodation. More than 90% of people who were sleeping rough at the start of the crisis are now in those temporary hotels and B&Bs. And today we're setting out how we can try to move forward and help more of them into longer term, better, more suitable homes. And we're going to be buying or building 6,000 homes and offering those to people who were previously sleeping rough before coronavirus so that they can begin to rebuild their lives and get the support that they need from a health perspective to become better and healthier.
And where will these homes be? Are they a variety of locations, or have you got any particular locations in mind for where you want to build them?
They're going to be across the country. They'll be focused, obviously, in the places where people were when they were sleeping rough. And that does tend to be our larger cities like London, Manchester, Birmingham. Mm. There are also some other places that have had higher numbers of rough sleepers historically, like Brighton and Bournemouth. So they'll be in those sorts of places. But there'll be accommodation available all across the country so that local councils and charities who are supporting these people who are previously on the streets can help them to get into what's known as move-on accommodation, the next step as you begin to rebuild your life.
And so will it be of a limited time frame, or will it be something that's kind of open-ended? And obviously people will be asking the question of who's paying for the actual rental or whatever of while they're living there.
Well, the accommodation will exist forever as a kind of national asset for which people who are sleeping rough can be moved into and then be in for a period of time whilst they're having a lot of support and care, particularly from a health perspective, because rough sleeping is as much an issue of addiction and mental health as it is of housing. And then when they're feeling well enough to do so, they'll then be able to move on into more permanent accommodation, either in the private rented sector or social housing later on. And these homes will then be able to exist forever as 6,000 homes to help rough sleepers. So when we have people sleeping rough on the streets in months and years to come, it will be an asset available to everybody to help the next generation, sadly, of people who end up on the streets into better accommodation and to begin to rebuild their lives.
So when would you expect the first one of these properties to be occupied?
Well, very soon. We've set an objective that at least half of them will be available in the next year, and all of them will be available in the next 2 years, which is quite a big challenge because we've not only got to source the homes, but also make sure that the right support network is available, because there's no point just asking somebody who might be quite unwell and have been on the streets for some time to be in a home all on their own. What we want to see is somebody move into a home and then have a support worker able to check in on them very regularly, perhaps even as often as every day, for the mental health, the addiction services to be there, and for that person to be given all the support and care that they need at this time. If you get that right, then the evidence suggests that you can really turn people's lives around. And some of the programs that we've been piloting, one called The Housing First, for example, has a 90% success rate. So there's a real potential here for something positive to come out of the present situation and for us to make a big dent in the number of people sleeping rough.
Sure. And as part of the programme, you're giving £9.2 million to Scotland, £5.6 million to Wales, £3.1 million for the Northern Ireland Executive. Do you think that might make them a bit more grateful?
This is one of those challenges where we all just need to work together as a country. We all share the same good intentions that we want to see far fewer people on the streets of our country at the end of this virus. And having got almost everybody off the streets, it would be a real shame if we failed at this moment and many of those people just drifted back onto the streets. So I know that my opposite numbers in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland share that mission. And we're going to work together as a national effort to try to fix this.
Sure. Now, I'm sorry to have to ask you this, because I'd rather hope that this story would have gone away, but Dominic Cummings still dominates an awful lot of some of the other news organisations, not ours, I have to say. Douglas Ross, the Scottish minister, resigned this morning. Are you expecting to see any other cabinet ministers getting out of the way?
No, I don't. I'm sorry, obviously, to see Douglas resign. I know him well. He's been a good minister. But the cabinet and the Prime Minister fully behind Dominic. He's made a very extensive statement, in an unprecedented one for a special advisor. He answered every question that was put to him by the media, explaining the circumstances and the decisions he took. Of course, there are some people who will disagree about those decisions, but I can certainly understand why he made them. The interests he had at heart were his sick wife and his young child. And I hope we can now move forward and devote our energy and time to the things that matter most in the next phase of the virus.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Prime Minister was quite right last night to more or less refuse to answer any more questions about it. Is that likely to be the government's line now whenever they do media briefings every day?
Well, I think, as you say, Dominic has made extremely detailed statement. He answered questions for almost an hour from every journalist who wanted to challenge him. And to my mind, at least, I think that's the end of the matter, and we need to move forwards, because there are so many important issues like the one we've just been discussing on rough sleeping, like track and trace, which the government's going to be moving forward with this week. And of course, the reopening of parts of the economy like non-essential retail that the Prime Minister announced yesterday, that we now need to focus on.
And can you tell us anything finally, Robert, about what's going on with some of these testing kits that have been bought and some of the testing which is being done at the moment? Because there seems to be a bit of disquiet around various different types of the testings that are being made available, like this antibody test from Roche Abbott, for example. Is that being made available to everybody as we speak?
I don't know about that particular test. We've obviously been investing in antibody tests and preparing the capacity to be able to produce them at scale if a test is reliable. And we've said consistently that, of course, there's no point having a test which we can't be certain is 100% or as close to 100% as possible in terms of reliability. And we're not quite there yet with antibody tests. But as soon as we are, then we'll obviously roll them out at speed. And the arrangements have been putting in place with some of the big labs in the country mean that there's far more capacity now to produce those tests and vaccines, if and when one is available domestically in the UK, so that we're not reliant on international supply.
OK. Robert Jenrick, thank you very much indeed. Housing Secretary, Member of the Cabinet, of course.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.